Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Dan Foster of National Review Online, filling in for Jim Garrity this week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and Dan, we knew the day was coming, but it's actually coming a little bit faster than we expected, and that's apparently the Supreme Court getting the case of Obamacare, and specifically the constitutionality of the individual mandate. It was always headed there, but it looked like the Obama administration was going to string this out as long as possible, certainly past the 2012 election if they could, and possibly even past the implementation point in 2014 of all these horrific provisions. But the news yesterday is that the administration either decided not to or missed the deadline to appeal its one loss at the appellate level in the 11th Circuit to the full court, meaning that it's either appealing it to the Supreme Court or not appealing it at all. So I think we can assume that it's going to appeal it to the Supreme Court. So the good news here is, A, I guess on some level, kudos to the administration for not dragging this out as much as they could. And secondly, we're going to be able to deal with this sooner rather than later, meaning we could get a decision before the 2012 election. And if it's the right one, which I think it will be, that'll be a huge feather in the cap for whoever's running against Obama.
Yeah, Greg, I think it's right that this is going to be decided in this. It was always going to be decided in the Supreme Court. And I think you're right in suggesting that we're going to get a favorable outcome. We happen to live in a system where, for better and for worse, Justice Kennedy wields a tremendous amount of power. And on this question, if you do any reading into his jurisprudence, one of his favorite slogans is the tie goes to liberty. I think on the individual mandate, we can be pretty confident that Justice Kennedy will overturn the individual mandate. Now, that's just my opinion, and there are people out there, constitutional scholars, who disagree, and I could be eating those words. But I agree with you that we're probably going to get a good outcome from the Supreme Court. And I also think it's always been the case that the court was our best avenue for overturning Obamacare. I was never sanguine about the possibilities of doing it through Congress, of doing a full repeal. I just think there's too much inertia. It's too hard to overturn things like this. It's too hard to make them stick. A piecemeal dismantling over many, many, many years, you know, might work. But the short answer is this is a good thing. The sooner we adjudicate it, the better. And I think the courts are the best avenue to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. There are some who say that if the Obama administration is appealing this directly to the Supreme Court, which we now assume that they are, that suggests they believe they're arguing from a position of strength. But as you've pointed out from Justice Kennedy, who will likely be the linchpin vote on this, I think the tide is definitely in our favor. And so obviously it will probably be added to the docket sometime in the next few months, a decision most likely sometime next June. And I say this in all seriousness, pray for the health of the five Supreme Court justices who are likely to be on the right side on this issue, because that will be absolutely critical.
Can you imagine? I mean, God, heaven forbid, can you imagine if President Obama has to make an appointment with Obamacare on the docket and has to fill the slot of one of the conservative justices on the court? I mean, can you imagine the confirmation fight? And then we saw Justice Kagan, in certain cases, refused to recuse herself, even though she had played a role as a member of the Obama administration in cases that were now before the court. So can you imagine if the president even managed to get somebody on the court to replace one of the conservative justices, the outrage that would emerge in a hearing about Obamacare? It'd be an interesting spectacle, if nothing else.
It'd be a scandal, assuming Kagan again refuses to recuse herself. But let's certainly hope that that won't be necessary. On to martini number two now, Dan. And President Obama, of course, out on the West Coast, essentially raising money, but squeezing in a town hall here and there to make sure that we pay for it. And so one of those events was Monday at a LinkedIn event. Surprise, surprise, about 95% of the questions were very sympathetic. What can the government do to help boost educational opportunities? What can the government do to help boost jobs? I think there was one question about, hey, I'm paying too much in taxes and I'm regulated too much. What can you do about it? And of course, Obama's reaction was, well, I'm not really sure what you're talking about.
One of the questioners should have said, what can't government do?
That's right. And but there's always, you know, whether it's Republican or Democratic president, most of the questions are going to be pretty favorable. But this guy absolutely took the cake.
I don't have a job, but that's because I've been lucky enough to live in Silicon Valley for a while and work for a small startup down the street here that did quite well. So I'm unemployed by choice. My question is, would you please raise my taxes?
And then, of course, the crowd bursts into spontaneous applause, and you're thinking, wow, this guy is in an interesting situation, doesn't seem to be hurting too much. Then the president pretty much lets the cat out of the bag here.
What was the startup, by the way? You want to give me a little hint?
It's a search engine.
So basically, it's one of the founders of Google who Dan is absolutely in a position to actually pay a little bit more in taxes. I'm sure he speaks for all small business owners across America.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There's this thing in the Constitution about no bills of attainder. You can't pass laws that are punitive to any one group or individual. It's unconstitutional. But, you know, these folks, Warren Buffett and this guy, are volunteering to have their taxes raised. So why not? You know, I think a Republican in Congress should introduce a bill that raises taxes on those two guys, you know, because they volunteered. I mean, it's not punitive. Of course, what these people are really saying is we want everyone's taxes raised. It's easy to point out, and many people have, that these folks aren't rushing to the Treasury to donate more money to the United States government, which they are fully capable of doing. There's even a website set up to allow you to pay down your portion of America's debt. And it's easy to say that, and that's legitimate. But the fact is, we have to keep in mind what they're really asking, which is that they do want their taxes raised, and they want everybody else's raised as well. Yeah, and the fact that this is a Google guy, I mean, of course, big business, you know, we've seen corporatism has no party. We've seen big business buddy up with President Obama. It's probably also had a moderating effect on him in some sense, but certainly the coziness with the likes of Warren Buffett and this guy is no good. Incidentally, Ted Leonisis, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, it's one of those Greek names, who owns the Washington Capitals and the Washington Wizards, is a multi-millionaire, you know, bordering on billionaire, had a great post out today. Now, he's a Obama donor and an Obama voter, but he had a post out today, a long post on his blog, decrying this class warfare stuff and talking about business owners as the, you know, engine of growth and how the corporate class should be cheered for carrying America on its back. He sounded like Ayn Rand. So if President Obama is losing guys like Ted L, whose last name I'm not sure I can pronounce correctly, he's in a lot of trouble. And this guy said, hey, raise my taxes too, but make sure that the new revenue is going towards things that are actually going to improve the economy in this country. And I suggested to him today that he should read The Corner for a week to understand just how big an if that is, that there's not much of a guarantee that any revenue could in any useful way be used to stimulate the economy.
As a good Greek boy, I can tell you it's Ted Leonsis, but your point is right. And it goes once again to the point that almost all of Obama's allies are completely frustrated with him. It's true that probably the vast majority of them won't abandon him come election day, but the fact that even his base is completely dissatisfied with him right now from demographic to demographic, I think says a lot. So on to martini number three now. And Dan, you know, Obama likes to go out there, as I mentioned before, and say, I don't really know what regulations you're talking about. When people's lives feel, you know, restricted and burdened by what the government's trying to impose. Well, here's one that just about every family can relate to. And I'll be quoting verbatim here from an AP report from last Thursday. Asthma patients who rely on over-the-counter inhalers will need to switch to prescription-only alternatives as part of the federal government's latest attempt to protect the Earth's atmosphere. The Food and Drug Administration said Thursday patients who use the epinephrine inhalers to treat mild asthma will need to switch by December 31st to other types that do not contain chlorofluorocarbons, an aerosol substance once found in a variety of spray products. Here's the big thing. But the switch to a greener inhaler will cost consumers more. Epinephrine inhalers are available via online retailers for about $20, whereas the alternatives, which contain the drug albuterol, range from $30 to $60. So basically, and we should point out that this started in 2008, so the Bush and Obama administrations are very much responsible for this. But basically, because of the illusion that a puff that goes directly into someone's lungs is going to somehow harm the environment, folks have to jack up their inhaler cost by at minimum 50% and at maximum 300%. If this is not a warning sign to all American families around the country that this government is completely out of control, I don't know of a better example.
Yeah, I mean, these kinds of anecdotes and these kinds of examples of regulations run awry are really useful because it does what Democrats do so well, which is that it pits one person in unfortunate circumstances against another person in unfortunate circumstances, or in this case, against it pits poor little sick Timmy with his inhaler against burning a hole in the ozone layer. So it's nice to give them a little taste of their own medicine here. But the fact is, it's true. You know, it's a ridiculous imposition, not just of cost, but of effectiveness. If you ask anyone who's asthmatic, in banning these inhalers. And it made me wonder. I mean, I know CFCs were a problem. I know there was a hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica. You know, I've seen the radar imagery. I'm not going to deny that. If you can breathe them into your lungs, as you said, you know, repeatedly, I wonder how much – it just made me scratch my head. How much of a problem could they be? But, you know, when this was announced, an old Megan McArdle piece on The Atlantic went into circulation, a couple years old, where she posed the question, well, why don't we have more green products? Because folks on the left say, well, these industrialists know how to make more environmentally friendly products. They're just too lazy to do it or too greedy to do it. Well, you know, and she makes a great point, which is that everyone knows that you can go and buy a low flow toilet from Home Depot, and you'll have to flush your toilet three times. Everyone knows that you can buy energy efficient washers and dryers, and you'll have to run your clothes through them two times. Everyone knows you can buy compact fluorescent, you know, light bulbs, and you'll have to squint in the glare to read your book in bed at night. Same thing with these asthma inhalers. The reason why we don't have more environmentally, quote-unquote, environmentally friendly asthma inhalers in this case is because they don't work as well. And if you want one that works as well, you need a prescription and you need to pay twice as much. And that's often the case with green products. They just don't work as well. Markets are pretty good at figuring out what people want.
Yeah, I think that's the bottom line here, and that's an excellent point that pretty much every environmental mandate has led to products that, A, use more energy, and B, are just far more frustrating for us to use. If you just left us to our own devices, federal government, we'd be doing just fine. Dan, we'll have to leave it there. Great having you with us today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Thank you.